Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
A special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it's about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the very dimply and vivacious and effervescent Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl.
What's going on with
good.
You?
All good. Everything's great.
Yeah, look, we have a full house.
Yeah, we like it like that.
We have Shante Garth, our producer in the booth. We have Mike Costella, our executive producer. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing good. And we have Dave Weiske, the Vice President of Customer Success at Cats Pride, our main sponsor here. They've been with us from day one, right here on the WGN Radio Theater. Dave, how are you, my friend?
Doing great, Carl, Lisa, Mike, Chandra. You know, when you think about Cats Pride Nation, this is exciting.
I mean,
when you think about what we're going to do tonight, giving away another full year of cat litter. Real exciting.
Very exciting. Very exciting. It's great to see you. And we'll get, we're going to pick a winner, and that'll be in this half of the hour. We also have classic radio shows for you. We have female detectives, right, Lisa?
Yes, this is a female empowerment tonight.
That's right. My favorite half of the species.
The female half.
Yeah, the female half.
How did I know that?
Oh, we have a Philco Mysteries, a quarter hour adventure. Way back from 1937, very interesting talk about that in a bit. Then Candy Matson, starring Natalie Masters, in a half-hour adventure. And then Murder Clinic, starring Elizabeth Morgan, in a show called A Scrap of Lace. So all female detectives on this edition.
Yes, and before we get into our Cats Pride contest,
yes.
I also want to mention that our music contest has begun. We
have
some
right.
texts coming in, so I
That's
wanted to make
right.
sure everybody knows that we have chosen our 1974 favorite songs for Carl, for Lisa, and for Roger.
Right.
And game open here. Text in your guesses to our phone, our text in line, 312-981-7200. If you don't have any of them right, I won't reply. But if you do have any one of the three right, I will send you a reply ASAP. And you are welcome to try again throughout the evening until we get three winners.
Right. So text in. Make sure you identify who you think that song belongs to. If it's Lisa's favorite song, my favorite song, or Roger's favorite song. The text in line is 312-981-7200.
I just said that.
It's 1974.
And
yeah.
the winner will get a Twilight
But this
Zone.
Is radio. You have to kind of...
No, you don't.
Yes, you kind of do.
No, you really don't.
Really? Yeah, okay. Well, I disagree with you as always.
That's okay. They're not listening to Carl anyways.
They didn't even hear anything you said. It's all good.
All right. So all of this, what we just talked about, it's a lot of stuff.
It is.
Is brought to you by Cats Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV series The Alienist, set in 1896 as gruesome murders have gripped New York City.
The Alienist?
Yes.
All right.
Well, you were listening.
Right. What do they win?
And they are going to win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's for a delicious pizza.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She starred alongside Denzel Washington in Man on Fire.
Gracie, you're smiling.
What?
You were smiling.
No, I'm not.
You were?
All right. Who is that actress? She's not a little girl anymore.
No, I was going to say, she sounds very young there.
Not a little girl anymore. All right. Who is that actress? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
We are back with show 210 of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Gracie, you're smiling.
What?
You were smiling.
No, I'm not.
You were?
And we're going to talk to Pat, who's on the phone. Hi, Pat.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Good. Glad you called in. Who is that young actress?
Dakota Fanning.
Dakota Fanning is exactly right. And you are a winner. And you have won a pizza or a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, which is, of course, home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. Thank you so much. The pizza sounds absolutely delicious. We're hoping you'll share with us one of these nights.
I could use a slice now.
Me too. Take care. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Pat. All right. Pat's a big winner. He won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. And you know what? Someone in the next few minutes is going to win a year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter thanks to Dave Weiske. And let's see. Dave Weiske's here. And also thanks to Cat's Pride, our sponsor. And Dave is here. So, Dave, tell us a little bit about Cat's Pride so our listeners can switch over if they're not using it already.
Well, again, the key attributes for this particular litter, one of our finest in the whole Cat's Pride offering, is we've got, you know, key attributes of lightweight, 50% lightweight. The odor control is phenomenal. Clumpability is excellent. And we're 99% dust-free. And again, this lightweight revolution, what we've been able to do in really shifting from our first Fresh and Light offering of 25% lighter is now at 50% lighter. And it's really exciting to see what we're also doing in the carbon footprint. The carbon footprint right now, I think for our 12 months running, we're going to end up at about 3.5 million pounds of carbon emissions that will be reduced due to this effort. Ultimately, you're talking this 50% lighter offering is taking trucks off the road, and we've calculated those emissions to roughly 2,200 trucks year to date.
Wow, that's a green company if you ever heard of it, right?
Look for the green jug.
That's right.
I'm not only for the green jug. I wanted to mention Catherine Heigl as your spokesperson and your relationship with the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation.
That's right, and you know, for Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, it was all founded because of her brother, who was tragically killed at the age of 15, fell out of a back of a pickup truck, and ultimately, being a very significant animal lover, and she created a foundation. Her and her mother went out and started this foundation to raise money for animal cruelty. And really, what we're doing in partnering with her is a portion of every sale of Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care supports the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation and the mission to end animal cruelty. And, you know, it's the best performing litter and it supports a great cause. And we're really excited to be partnered with her and really excited about this next year as we go into this.
And I know you have other great causes. This isn't the first time that you have partnered with shelters throughout Chicagoland and throughout where? I don't know.
Well, the animal cruelty shelters. I mean, Dan Jaffe, who's not here tonight, unfortunately has a trip tomorrow. But he has been the chair of the Chicago Animal Cruelty Society, and he's been fighting that cause everywhere. And ultimately, we have been working throughout the nation with all kinds of shelters to really contribute litter where the needs are there. And we've done that all over the place. And it's makes us feel good about ourselves and helps out also our alignment for a long time was with the American Humane Society.
Yeah,
I was going to say, what a perfect marriage that is then with you and Catherine Heigl to continue that trend.
Well, the great thing is not only is Cat's Pride Fresh and Light the best kitty litter on the market because of all the reasons we talked about, it's clumps better and it's lighter and all these great things. Odor control is the best. It's the absolute best kitty litter. So if you have a kitty cat out there, folks, we urge you to switch because, first of all, they're our sponsor. They've been our sponsor from day one here on the WGN Radio Theater. They are what brings you these great classic radio shows here. And so we ask you to try them. Check it out because if you would check them out, you'll see it's the best. And we actually have some testimonials.
That's right.
I want to read a couple of them.
And this is going to be exciting because you guys, you're doing show 210 tonight?
210.
Which is phenomenal. I mean, you're talking, 2 years, you know, on the air with this program. And you also have a back-to-back series, 209. What was the theme for show 209?
209 was male detectives.
And what is it tonight?
Female detectives.
So what I did was brought you a few reviews of the two different types of Fresh and Light Ultimate Care. We have scented and unscented, so you can figure out which one is female or male. But I gave them to a female, and I gave one to a male. So,
well,
Lisa, why don't you lead
us
on?
I'm going to go with the female because tonight is all female detectives. These are actual customer reviews.
Yep.
So we didn't make these up. I couldn't have made this up if I wanted to. This is for Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Ultimate Care Lightweight Unscented Hypoallergenic Multi-Cat Litter. And the first customer review says 5 out of 5 stars, excellent cat litter. This is from Jen, who says, this is just perfect. The dust is way lower than with many so-called low-dust cat litters. The odor control is excellent. The litter clumps fast, making cleaning the litter box really easy. I appreciate the lighter weight of the litter.
Awesome.
And I feel the same way.
That's great.
Nobody wants to lug it around.
No.
This one also 5 out of 5 stars. Best cat litter ever. Best cat litter ever. I have 4 cats and only 2 cat boxes. I clean them daily, but everyone remarks that there is no cat smell in my house. I highly recommend. So it doesn't get
important.
Any better than that.
Yeah.
From actual customers using the actual product.
And that is our unscented version, and a great job by Lisa sharing a few reviews.
All right, so this one is the scented. This is Cat's Pride Fresh and Light Element Care Lightweight Scented Multi-Cat Litter. And here's just a couple of reviews. 5 out of 5, light and works well. This litter doesn't give up much dust and works very well to deodorize the litter box. I prefer to order it from Amazon with free Prime shipping and quick delivery. The price is always great. And then another one, 5 out of 5. That was Joe Marie. And then the next one is 5 out of 5. This is Little Jay. And he or she says, great litter. I have been wanting to try this new litter, and happy I did. It clumps just as nicely as the other Cat's Pride Fresh and Light litter. There's virtually no dust. My little guy likes it, and that speaks well, as he's picky about his litter, and so is his mom.
I love that.
So, these are testimonials from users. And, folks, if you're not using Cat's Pride, please switch over. Check it out. They do amazing things for stopping cruelty to animals all across the globe, really. And plus, it's the best kitty litter there is. And you know what? They also give a year's supply of kitty litter to one of our listeners every single month. So we're going to do that right now, right?
I want to mention, Dave, before we wrap this up, that we just got another testimonial right on our text-in line, which says, many thanks to Cat's Pride for such great enjoyment. I buy the product for my sister who has a new kitten. The kitty loves it.
Oh,
so
awesome.
The testimonials
I
continue.
I got goosebumps. That's
there
great.
You go.
Well, before we pick, just tell everyone where they can get Cat's Pride kitty litter.
Yeah, so, you know, you mentioned a couple of the reviews, and in one of the areas in e-commerce, we have Chewy.com, we've got Walmart.com, and of course, Amazon. In your local stores, you talk about here in the Chicagoland area, Mariano's, Jewel, and Meijer. Meijer is a big partner of ours, and we're really excited to have them. You get into Kroger, a lot of the Walmart brick-and-mortar stores. Everywhere, really, you go to a grocery store, you just look for the green jug. You'll see it, you'll find it, and you'll enjoy it.
That's great. All right, so something that Dan Jaffe and Dave Wieske do every single month is pick a winner. Now, here's how you can enter for next month, because they do this every single month. Just take a picture of your kitty cat, right, Lisa?
Yep. You can send it over to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Make sure to include your name, your cat's name, your city and state, and send it in every month, because each month we get new submissions, and each month we pick a new winner. So
yeah,
don't forget
send the
to
same,
send it in.
You can send the same picture, yeah. but enter it every single month.
And we will have a new winner for the end of September.
All right. Could we have a little drum roll, please?
Here we go. Okay, we've got a winner. And the winner is Diane Sigma. It's cats Max, Grace, and Sophie from Mundelein, Illinois. Again, the cats are Max, Grace, and Sophie. Congratulations, Diane.
And
what's her last name?
It is Sigma.
Diane Sigman. All right, Diane, if you're listening, congratulations. You're a big winner. And, so she's going to win some Cat's Pride kitty litter, a year's supply.
A year's supply, for sure.
Wow, that's great. And so next month, Dan Jaffe and Dave Wieske will be back here with more. All right, so you know what, Lisa? We have a lot of texts coming in, but nobody has gotten it right yet, have
no,
they?
No, but I will give a clue that we've got some of the right songs, but none of them with the right people.
Wow.
So we're just going to keep plugging away here.
We need to keep plugging away. All right, so here's what we're doing, folks. We have chosen Roger Badish, me, and Lisa have chosen our favorite songs from 1974. And, good songs. I don't like your song, but
you
I like...
You never like my song.
I like Roger's song, and I like... Your song is...
Okay, I like my song.
Your song's not so good.
You know what? When we figure out what it is, I am sure the listeners will agree with me.
My song's
like,
great.
It's not a competition between you and me. That's
my
not what this
great.
Is.
My song's
so
great.
Clear. We're not up against each other. Just so
really?
I like your song. I just like mine better.
You know what?
What?
My song's way better than your song.
Okay. Well,
but you know, I will say this.
Yes.
Roger's song's pretty darn good.
I like
too.
Roger's. We can agree on Roger's
song.
Yeah,
Roger's song is really
you know,
good. I like Roger's
Roger
song.
Roger spends weeks
My single's
choosing.
Coming out next week.
You're
what?
Saying.
Oh, sorry.
He spends a lot of time making these decisions, so yeah. I really admire your tenacity.
I just did another number out of the hat for next week's.
Okay. So,
I had 15 choices.
Send me a text.
I will.
Because you got ours.
For next week?
Mm-hmm. I sent him to you last night.
I was sleeping. I was here.
You were
not
here.
Allowed to sleep.
I don't know what I'm doing.
I know that.
Thank you.
All right, we'll talk.
All right, so folks, text in your guesses for Roger's favorite song from 1974, mine and Lisa's, and make sure you do identify who you think that song belongs to. And if you get it right, you're going to win some Twilight Zone CDs. We'll send them out in the mail. It usually takes a week or two, but maybe like 10 days to get them. So
Send them faster, Carl.
Yeah, right.
Hand deliver them.
Come on.
I'm actually
overnight.
I'm actually wrapping them. I'm driving
them on
to
a
the
drone
post
or something.
Off.
Borrow Lisa's jet.
You know, here's
I
the
have
thing.
A drone. You can just pick it
yeah,
up and drop it at the door.
Here is the thing, Roger, and I mean this. Lisa has like. A whole staff of people that help her do things. I have nobody.
A lot of help.
I have no one.
Everybody
but they're already
needs
overworked.
A support staff.
They can't deal with your stuff. They're overworked.
It's just me. I get up in the morning
it's
on
just
Monday.
Me.
I get the CDs. I wrap them. I type up the label.
He records them first. Yeah.
Drive over to the post office.
It's a lot of work for a Monday morning.
I get my tape gun out. I'm serious.
Yeah.
I do all that, Lisa. She has a whole staff. Does all that kind of stuff.
Some people got it and some people don't.
I know, and you got it.
I got it.
All right, so nobody's gotten it right yet. The number to text in, 312-981-7200. When we come back from the news, we're going to play a quarter-hour female detective series called Philco Mysteries from 1937. Then in our second hour, it's Candy Matson, and then Murder Clinic. It's female detectives on this edition 210 of the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, folks, we do have a winner for my song. Someone did get my song correct. We are not going to play it right this second because we want to get into this first show. But you can stop texting in for me. But still text in for Lisa's song and for Roger's song from 1974. And we'll reveal my song after Philco Mysteries. This was an interesting series. It came to radio way back in 1937, and it was 15 minutes, 5 days a week. And each 15-minute show was complete in its own 15 minutes. The character name reflected the sponsor, Philco Radio Tubes, and her name was Phyllis Coe, and so this was called Philco Mysteries. She was a beautiful girl detective, and Peggy Allenby played the character of Phil Cole, and Clayton Bud Collier, who played Superman on the radio. He was also the host of Beat the Clock on television for a while. Played her pal Tom Taylor. He was a journalist and mystery novelist. Also in the cast were House Jameson, Jay Johnston. This is an episode from September 21st, 1937. It's called The Mystery of the Death Ray Tube. And here's a quarter-hour episode, uninterrupted now, of Philco Mysteries.
Philco Mysteries on the air.
The Mystery of the Death Ray Tube, a new kind of radio contest. Mystery, thrills, suspense. Your chance to play detective. Your opportunity to win a huge weekly prize, maybe even a mammoth grand prize in this great $50,000 cash prize contest. Every week at this same time over this station, your Philco radio tube dealer presents transcribed Philco Radio Mysteries. Fascinating fun. $50,000 in cash for the winners. A contest of skill that you may win. Anybody can enter, nothing to buy. Read about all this in the big Philco mystery book, free at your Philco radio tube dealer store. You cannot win without this book. Get your copy. Contains official entry blanks, lists the prizes, tells you all the details, shows you all the rules. In a few seconds, Philco radio mystery number 3 will begin. Have you got your Philco mystery book open to pages 8 and 9? Use the diagram on page 8 to help you as you listen. Take notes. Keep your ears open. Don't miss a word. Ready? Then listen. Philco, the beautiful girl detective, is going to solve a mystery. 126 people are going to win big cash prizes for telling how she solves it. Maybe you'll win. Here comes the mystery of the death ray tube. In the mountains of Colorado, Phyllis Coe and her admirer, Tom Taylor, are sitting on a rail fence in front of a large cabin, talking and enjoying the morning sun. Tom seems a bit perplexed.
Well, it seems to me that a few words of explanation are in order.
I refuse to explain a thing till you point that gun the other way.
All right. But I'm at least going to pop it a few tin cans.
If you fire that gun and waken old Dr. Crawford, he'll have you boiled in oil.
The old doc is certainly a mystery man. Come on, Phil, be a good girl and give me all the details, huh? Why are we out here? What are old Dr. Crowfoot and his two assistants doing?
Well, Dr. Joseph Crowfoot and my father were great friends. Before Dad began devoting all his time to criminology, he and Dr. Crowfoot used to work together, experimenting with electricity. 3 days ago, I received a wire from the doctor asking me to fly out here. He said he'd concluded an experiment that he and Dad had often discussed, and he knew I'd be interested in hearing about it.
Well, that certainly doesn't clear it up very much. Hey, see that tin can over there by that wooden shed?
Oh, now, Tom, don't.
Oh. Ah, bullseye.
Now you've done it. Here comes Dr. Crawford. He looks like a thundercloud.
Good heavens, man. Put that pistol back in the holster.
Oh, I'm sorry, Doctor. I was just taking a pot shot at that tin can there by the shed.
Yes. And inside that shed lies the culmination of all my years of infinitely patient work.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Crawford.
Oh, I know, my dear. I know. Confound it. Just when I want to talk to you, here come those two crazy assistants of mine. Yes, Conrad. Yes, Kent. What do you want?
Our laboratory assignment for the day, naturally.
Must I direct every step you take, Conrad? Start something of your own.
I already have, sir. New theory. Thank you for giving me a chance to get back to it. Coming, Conrad?
Yes, I'm coming. You and your fool theory.
That fellow Conrad gets under my skin.
Phyllis, this is going to be the greatest day of my life.
Oh, how do you mean, Dr. Crawford?
Well, today, for the first time, my scientific development will be demonstrated before eyes other than my own. A representative of the United States government will be here.
Oh, it sounds very interesting, Doctor.
Interesting. My dear, what lies inside that wooden shed is so interesting that the greatest brain in the War Department is coming here to investigate. I received a telegram from Washington this morning. Major William Osborne is arriving by train this afternoon.
The Major Osborne?
Yes, the Major Osborne.
What is this development of yours, Doctor? A poison gas?
Poison gas, huh? Nothing quite so elementary. But late this afternoon, when Major Osborne arrives, you will know what is in that shed. Well, Major Osborne, are you ready?
Yes, Doctor, quite.
Well, come then. Let's all get over to the shed.
My dear Mr. Taylor, if you'd been cooped up in Washington as I've been for the past 5 years, you'd really appreciate this country.
Now, here we are. Just let me unfasten this lock. There we are. I'll step inside, please.
Thank you. After you, Miss Cole.
Oh, thank you.
And now, my friend, what do you see?
Well, I see a guinea pig in a cage.
The only thing out of the ordinary, Doctor, is that odd-looking glass cylinder resting on the bed of cotton.
Out of the ordinary, you say? See, now, my friend, this is a death ray tube.
A death ray?
But, Doctor, for years, men have been trying to...
Of course, Major, of course. But it remained for me, Joseph Crowfoot, to discover the secret.
Dr. Crowfoot? If that glass tube really does produce a death-dealing ray, your invention will be the most dangerous weapon in the world.
Exactly. There will be enough energy stored within my death-ray machine to destroy the entire race of man.
Does the model function, Doctor? Have you put it to the test?
Oh, yes, on small animals. Of course, you must realize that this is only a working model of the death-ray machine I hope to build. Still, it has power enough to kill a man. My friends, the government in whose hands my machine is placed would be omnipotent.
Of course it would.
Dr. Crowfoot, assuming the efficiency of your invention, are you planning to turn it over to the United States government?
Yes.
Dr. Crowfoot, who else knows of your invention?
Well, my two assistants, of course.
Could they replace it?
They know nothing of its vast intricacies. They have merely helped me in general details of the construction. I am the only man living who can replace it.
May I have a look at the tube, Doctor?
Stay away from it. Don't touch it. Why, if it dropped only 2 feet, it would shatter and its energies be lost forever.
Is it simple to operate?
Yes, Major. You notice this platinum key at the base of the tube?
Yes, Doctor.
One turn of this key forms an electrical contact, releasing the lethal energy from the opposite end. One turn would snuff out life. The large machine, when completed, will be able to wipe out whole armies.
But, Doctor...
But for the present, we shall have to be content with this guinea pig. Now, don't worry, my dear. The ray is quick, deadly, and painless. Stand aside, please.
Stand here, Phil.
Ready now? I turn the platinum key.
Dr. Crowfoot, I congratulate you.
What will the government say to that, Major Osborne?
The answer is obvious, my dear sir. You have succeeded.
But now it's growing dark. In the morning, we shall have a further demonstration. Come, everybody. It's time for dinner. You know, we go to bed early in the mountains.
Fire! Fire! Hey, everybody, wake up! Fire!
Tom! Tom, where is it?
Down in the wooden shed.
Good heavens, the doctor's tube. Doctor, are you up?
Yes, Major. Oh, good Lord. Come on, help me.
Where are we, Doctor?
The shed is burning. Hurry, Kent. Hurry, Conrad. The shed is
what
burning.
What time is it, Tom?
After midnight. Look out, Dolly. Don't stumble over that bush.
Follow me, Miss Coe. I'll fix the way for you.
Oh, I can see now, Major. The flames are pretty high.
Doctor, don't go in there. Don't. Conrad, he's gone in.
Better come out, Doc. It's pretty hot in there.
Dr. Crowfoot, come out.
Here he comes. Oh, thank goodness.
Are you all right, Doctor? It's gone.
What?
My tube is gone.
Doctor, are you sure?
Yes. Here is the box of cotton, but my tube has disappeared. Someone has stolen my death ray.
Oh.
Look, the fire's died out suddenly.
Yes. You think I've not installed protection? An automatic carbon dioxide extinguisher. But my tube is gone. It's gone. Which of you has it? Who is the thief?
Just a moment, Doctor. I found something.
My tube? Quickly, is it my tube?
No, a rag soaked in kerosene.
Then this fire was set deliberately.
Yes, apparently by someone who didn't know about your extinguisher.
Well, that could be any one of you. Nobody knew of that automatic system but myself. Who is the thief? Which one of you?
Now, please be calm, Doctor, and let's go at this quietly. Come, everybody. I think we'd better all get back to the large cabin.
You want me, Miss Cole?
Yes, Mr. Kent. And you too, Mr. Conrad.
Don't worry, little lady. I'm tagging along.
Boy, I wish I'd had time to put on my slippers. Can't say I like this barefoot boy business.
Hurry up, Phyllis. Now, you're a detective. Find the thief.
I'll do my best, Dr. Crowfoot. But you must be calm.
Here's the cabin. Come on, get inside. Get inside, all of you. Come on. Don't anybody try to sneak away.
All right. Let's all gather right inside the door. Light that kerosene lamp, Mr. Kent.
Okay, Miss Cole.
Ouch! Oh, holy Moses.
What is it, Tom?
I stepped on something hot. What in the world? Hold that lamp over, will you? Ah, now I see what it is. Here you are, Major Osborne. It's your pipe.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Taylor. I probably dropped it in all that excitement.
Yes, and the ashes fell out. They're still glowing.
Well, come on. Who has my tube? Hand it over.
No, wait a moment, Doctor. Now, everyone in this room and everyone in the world would have a motive for stealing Dr. Crowfoot's glass tube. It means power. The person who opened that shed and took the tube started the fire as a blind. He hoped everything would be consumed so that we'd think the tube had also been destroyed.
Remarkable.
Oh, you shut up, Conrad. Go ahead, Phyllis.
Excuse me, Miss Coe, but I noticed that Mr. Taylor is suffering from his burned foot.
Yeah, that's right, Major Osborne. It hurts pretty much.
I have some ointment on the dresser in my room. Why don't you go in and use it?
Well, thanks, I will. Give me a match, will you, Kent?
You won't need it, Taylor. I left the candle burning in there.
Oh, all right, Major, thanks. I'll be right back as soon as I put some stuff on my foot.
Come, Phyllis, hurry. Don't waste any more time.
All right, Doctor. Now, according to the French law, a man is guilty until proven innocent. I think that's the way we'd better proceed.
The French method works pretty well, too. I had occasion to study it in action last winter in Paris.
Oh. And now, Mr. Kent, Where were you when the alarm was given?
Well, next door in my cabin. I was sound asleep.
You share the cabin with Mr. Kent, don't you, Mr. Conrad?
Yes, and I can assure you I was asleep, too.
And you, Major?
I was in a deep sleep. I'd had a long journey, you remember.
And you didn't awaken until Tom shouted?
That's correct. Somehow, in the pitch dark, I found my slippers and dressing gown and dashed from my room.
Oh, come now. This is all foolishness. We're not getting anywhere.
On the contrary, Dr. Crawford. I know who stole your tube.
You? Who? Who is he?
This gentleman, who has also stolen the real Major Osborne's credentials.
Oh, what?
The Major?
Say, are you sure?
Stay where you are. Every one of you.
The tube, look. It's in his hand.
Yes, Doctor. It fits very nicely into the pocket of a dressing gown. Miss Coe, I congratulate you upon your cleverness. As a matter of fact, you are far too clever.
For heaven's sake, don't drop my tube.
No fear of that. I've traveled halfway around the world to obtain this weapon. It seems that my government had an interest in it also.
What are you going to do?
There is only one thing I can do, with all of you. To borrow the expression of Dr. Crawford, the ray will be quick, deadly, and painless.
You can't do this. It's my life's work. Here, give it to me.
Doctor, come back.
The doctor... You
see? It really works on larger game than guinea pigs. And now, let's make it short. Ladies first, as usual.
Tom!
Good shot, Taylor.
I'll say. I came back just in time.
Look, the platinum key is still in his right hand.
And the tube is smashed to bits.
Poor old Dr. Crowfoot. If only I'd come a minute sooner.
Oh, Tom, do you know, somehow I'm glad you didn't.
It's a good thing Tom Taylor came in just then, I say. Major Osborne was an ugly customer. He fooled everybody but Phil Coe, the girl detective. Did he fool you? Why did Phil Coe suspect Major Osborne? You ought to be able to tell why. You heard everything that happened. Of course, you can give three reasons which enabled Phil to discover the guilty person. Enter the Phil Coe Radio Mystery Contest. $50,000 in cash prizes for the winners. Huge weekly prizes, gigantic grand prizes. You probably have learned all about it in your free Philco mystery book, which your Philco radio tube dealer gave you without any obligation. Read the list of prizes again. Read the rules again. Be sure to write your answer on the official contest blank contained in the book. Remember, you must use this official entry blank for your answer, and you can't get the official entry blank without the book. So get your free copy now. This is a contest of skill. Your skill may win for you. Names of the major winners in this week's contest will be broadcast as soon as possible on a following Philco Radio Mystery program. Listen for Philco Radio Mysteries every week at this same time over this same station. Listeners with Philco radio tubes in their sets are going to have an advantage. Did you stop to think of that? In this contest, you will need to get good reception so that you won't miss anything that is done or said. And the best reception is what you get with Philco radio tubes. Next week, another Philco radio mystery. Next week, Phil Coe, the girl detective, is going to find the guilty person in the thrilling airplane drama, Murder in the Sky. Next week, another opportunity to win your share of $50,000 in cash prizes.
All right, that is Philco Mysteries, September 21st, 1937, with the mystery of the Death Ray Tube. And I hope you enjoyed that, a good female detective mystery show. A little later in our program, it's Candy Matson and then Murder Clinic, all female detectives on this edition of the WGN Radio Theater. We're going to play some commercials. When we come back, we will reveal my favorite song from 1974. All right, program 210 here. We're every Saturday and Sunday night. Lisa and I are on the WGN microphones talking about classic radio, playing all your favorite shows. And this weekend we had male detectives and female detectives. We have female detectives all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning here. And we're playing a contest. We've been doing this for a few weeks now, right, Lisa?
Right, Carl.
Picking our favorite songs.
When you allow me to pick the ones I want.
Yeah, well, your song's not that good.
Mine's a really good song. Nobody has chosen my song
for
any
why?
Of us.
You want to know why nobody's
nope,
chosen
it's a
song?
Great song.
Because nobody likes that song.
Okay, you guys.
Not even the people that
please,
sang that song
no.
like it.
Please choose my song so we can prove Carl wrong
no.
and play it, and we can enjoy it. It's a great song.
No,
but
it's
nobody's
not.
Chosen it, so keep trying.
All right.
It's a good one. But,
and
we have a winner for Carl's song.
Yeah, my song was identified pretty quickly, I
yeah,
think,
it
here.
Was.
Let's play it right now. My favorite song from 1974.
Yeah, how long is that lead
intro,
in?
Right?
Well, that's
thanks.
Part of the whole.
Oh, it's the experience.
The mood.
It's the whole thing. It's like it leads up. It's like building here.
Oh, I see. Long intro.
Come on, tell me you don't love this song, Roger.
Well, he didn't pick it. Oh, yeah, that's what I was about to do.
I've been driving all night, my hands wet on the wheel. There's a voice in my head that drives my heel. It's my baby calling, says I need you here. And it's a 4:30 and I'm shifting gear. Radar Love.
Ah, there you go. Radar Love, Golden Earring, my favorite song from 1974. Gosh, love that song. Oh, yeah. That takes me back to the disco days and the... although that wasn't really
That's not a disco song.
I know.
Song,
but it takes me back to my days listening to music and having the...
the phonograph?
Well, I had the 45. I had the 45s.
I did, too.
You know?
Remember, you used to put that little round thing in the center so you could play the 45s?
Roger had wire recordings, and I had 45s when he first started. Roger remembers the Victrola, the 78s.
Yeah, you got to stand there and just wind it up.
And prior to that, the wire recording.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then it was
there
pretty
wasn't,
much...
You know what? I don't think there was music back then, was
well,
there, Roger?
Well, back then, we just kind of yelled the distances.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
it sounded musical.
That was,
you know
that
what
was
he did?
After we drew pictures on the stone walls.
A little hieroglyphic. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He would go get a shell on the beach.
Yeah.
And
bang it
blow
on
it. Yeah. Right.
Listen to it.
And that was music.
That was music
and then
for
I'd,
Roger.
I'd hit the lyrics of Radar Love.
Back in B.C., you know, back in the B.C. days.
Yeah.
All right. Keep up the guesses for Lisa and Roger. Nobody has guessed my song for anybody.
Nobody's getting your song.
But
nobody
we,
likes your
somebody
song.
Somebody has guessed Roger's song, but not for Roger.
Oh, okay.
And nobody's guessed mine at all. So be creative.
I'll say this, though. Roger's song is outstanding.
What is wrong with mine?
Your song's...
What?
But I just don't like your song this time.
Roger, do you like my song?
I love your song.
Okay.
Really?
Just checking.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't like it. Huh?
So I love that song.
I love
that good
song.
Of a song.
It's a good song.
I mean, of
I
all
think
the
you don't like it because I picked
that's
it.
That's not true. That's
yep.
not true.
I think it is.
It's not true. That's not true.
Like the kids would say on American Bandstand, it's got a good beat and I can dance to it.
That's right. It has a good story, too.
Well, does it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. All right. So Lisa Wolf, her favorite song is not my favorite song, and
vice versa.
Right, but you liked Radar Love.
I
Radar
do like
Love's
it.
A great tune.
I do like it, but it wasn't my favorite.
Right.
Yeah, I already worked on. I got my final for next week down to 10. Can you believe that?
How long did it take us to do ours?
But I'm no.
We do it together. We
I
kind
love
of
music
talk about
too much.
Them and we sing them and then just pick one.
See, I love music too much and too many of the genres. So it's
we're the
very
same.
Difficult.
You're no different than we are, Roger. Yeah, your decision is no more difficult. You
yes,
can make it,
it
sound
is.
Like it is.
How fast did it get you to get to your number one for 75? How long?
Me?
Well, I saw it right away.
Three minutes.
Ooh, I love that one.
I would say three minutes for me.
Yeah,
but
I'm right there.
Did you look at the others?
I looked at every
one. Yes, but as soon as I hit that one, I just stopped and said, I love that one. That's
for
the
what,
one.
75?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For next week.
Yep. I just saw it and went, ooh, I love that one. No. See, Carl doesn't remember what I picked. I can't tell you right now.
I'm trying to remember what I picked.
Yeah, but I got it down to, it took a while to get it down to 10. I think my first list, I got down to 20. And then over the past week, I've
got it
down to 10. All
right, well, you're working hard, Roger. You keep at it.
I think seriously about this stuff because I love music
so much. You keep working hard. I'm glad I gave you a job because you got nothing else to do all week.
So now you've got a job to do.
You know what's going to be fun when we get into like the late 70s, early 80s, and there's all those great disco songs.
Oh, God. Please,
oh,
Carl.
Disco. Oh, no, Roger.
Please.
We're going to have to change this game.
You know, everyone's going to guess your song before you even pick it.
You're like a window.
Yeah. And Marilyn McCoo, or what was her name? Marilyn McCoo, is that
Marilyn
name?
McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. from Fifth Dimension.
You know, when you had Donna Summer, and all those great disco guys and girls, right?
Okay.
Donna Summer, she was like the queen of disco.
You know, I want you to come in next when we hit the disco
Trust.
Music. I want you to wear your short gym shorts, your
tight
basketball shirt.
I don't want him to wear short gym shorts.
And I want you to come skating in on roller skates.
Please, Roger, I don't want him to wear shorts.
I will do it.
Do it.
I will do it.
Take
do
a picture,
you have roller
post
skates?
It.
No.
I didn't think so.
But I can buy some.
Will you?
With what you pay
he's
me to do this
cheap.
Show?
He's very cheap, Roger. There's no way he's going to buy anything.
I will do it. You should see how much Lisa pays me to do this show.
Well, is that enough to buy roller skates?
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, welcome back. Thanks, Roger, and thanks, Esmeralda. This is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater, and we'll be here till 2 o'clock in the morning playing your favorite classic radio shows. In this hour, we have Candy Mattson. She was a female detective that came to radio in the late 1940s. We have an episode from 1949 for you in this hour, so make sure you stay with us for that. It's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
Carl, this sounds like a television show that you might appreciate.
Okay.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV series Barry, about an ex-Marine who works as a low-rent hitman in the Midwest.
Really?
Yeah, and I know that you like this actor as well.
Oh, yeah, I very much like him.
I know you do. And the winner is going to win a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. He was one of the stars of Happy Days.
Hey, now let's talk about something important like you.
All right, who is that great actor? Was that him? Yeah, that was him.
Okay.
Give us a call, 312-981-7200. When we get back, we'll take a winner right after these words.
This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that movie clip one more time.
Hey, now let's talk about something important like you.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
Hi there.
Glad you got through.
Thank you.
So who is that actor?
Hey, that's the Fonz, Henry Winkler.
You are absolutely right. Henry Winkler will always be the Fonz, no matter what he has done or will do. And you are a winner, and you have won a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, which is, of course, home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnati's.com. Congratulations. Enjoy a great pizza on us tonight or anytime.
Hey, thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Bill. All right, Bill's a big winner, Lou Malnati's pizza. So nobody else has gotten any of these right, huh, Lisa?
Well, we have had my song for others, and we've had Roger's song for others, but nobody has had it quite right.
All right, so there's still two songs.
We're still looking.
To be identified. You can try to guess Lisa's song and Roger's song from 1974. The text in line, 312-981-7200. In the meantime, it's time for Candy Mattson. This was a detective series that came to NBC Radio in 1949. Now, Natalie Masters starred as female private investigator without a trace of squeamishness. She had a wry sense of humor and a penthouse on Telegraph Hill in San Francisco. She was doing pretty good for herself,
fancy,
Lisa.
Fancy.
I'll say, not as rich as you,
well,
but
you
she
know.
Was pretty rich. She was in love with Police Detective Ray Mallard, played by Henry Leff. And the series concluded with Ray finally proposing and Candy accepting and retiring from the detective business. And they just lived happily ever after.
Well, that's a
Isn't
nice
that
story.
Nice? Like you and Dan.
Yeah, exactly.
The radio series ended in 1951. So we have a 1949 episode for you now. This is from December 19th, 1949. It's called Jack Frost. Here's Natalie Masters in part one of Candy Matson.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
Candy! Candy, over here!
What? Why, Myra Fisher, what are you doing here in a department store with your work clothes on?
I work here, dear. I'm a wage slave.
Well, I must say on you, it looked good. What do you slave at?
I'm head of advertising and promotion.
Well, quite a spot, hey, girl?
Yeah, it was until this morning.
Oh?
Now my neck is in the fire.
What'd you do? Forget to proofread one of your ads?
Nothing so trivial, dear, believe me. But am I glad to have bumped into you?
Maybe you'll change your mind when I tell you I've been shoplifting.
No, I'm serious, Candy. Could you spare a moment and come on up to my office?
Why, sure. And wipe that frown from off your brow. It's wrinkling your makeup.
Well, yours would wrinkle, too, if you had a missing Santa Claus helper on your hands.
Well, well, now, there's a situation. And it almost broke Candy Matson's heart when someone told her there was no Santa Claus's helper, one Jack Frost. Listen, here she is now to tell you about it.
That's right, what the man said. I ran into a deal where we had a missing Santa Claus helper, Jack Frost. The gent with the icicles was supposed to talk to the tiny tots at the Brownstone, one of San Francisco's larger and classier department stores. I had gone down there that afternoon shopping. I wanted a bow tie for my old pal, Inspector Ray Mallard of the San Francisco Police Department. A bow tie that lit up and spelled Cossack when you pressed the button on the battery. That was when I bumped into this gal, Myra Fisher. We went up to her office on the sixth floor, and she sat me down. Cigaretted me, too.
You think I'm fooling about this Jack Frost thing, don't you, Candy?
Well, now, look, dear, we all have our little peccadilloes. Yours just merely happens to be a missing Jack Frost. You'll get over it.
I refrain from hurling this ashtray at you, Candy, only because of our long acquaintance.
Good.
Now listen to me. We've had a Santa Claus helper here for almost a month, and a darn good one. The kids were crazy about him. This morning, he didn't show.
You don't suppose Jackie boy got in the mood and caught the Christmas spirit, do you? The kind that comes in pints?
No, he wasn't that sort of Joe.
Well, your answer's simple. Hire a new one.
They're hired through an agency. I called the one we do business with, and they're fresh out of Jack Frost. And I've got to get one, Candy. Otherwise, I come down 10 notches in the opinion of the brass.
I don't want you to think I'm unsympathetic, Myra, but what can I do?
Well, you get around, you know people. Find me somebody, anybody, who'll take over the job of being Jack Frost.
Well, okay. I'll do the best I can, Myra.
Candy, you're a dear.
Yeah, one of Santa's dears. Okay, I'll try and find you a Jack Frost, Myra, but don't hold it against me if he turns out to look more like Humpty Dumpty. I went home and looked up the Webster definition of soft. It said soft, easily yielding to pressure. That was me, Candy Matson, girl dope. Here I had all my Christmas shopping to do, and I agreed to find a substitute Jack Frost. I had no idea where to start. So I changed into something red and green for a stop and go, also for Christmas, and went over to see my friendly advisor, Rembrandt Watson. Rembrandt is a photographer and excellent, too, now that he doesn't have the sherry shivers or the port palsies. He lives on California Street, just kitten rompers from Old St. Mary's, with a statue of Sun Yat-sen for company in a park next door.
Candy Dove, how delightful. Do come in, won't you?
Thanks, Rembrandt.
Oh, Pet, you're acquainted with my friend Diogenes Murphy, aren't you?
Oh, yes. Hello again, Mr. Murphy.
Well, good afternoon, lass. You look prettier than you did the last time I saw you.
Uh-oh, here comes the blarney.
Young lady, Diogenes Murphy, the honest Irishman, never says a word he doesn't mean. Now, how do you think I managed to sell so many used cars at my place out on Venice Avenue?
Because you're an honest Irishman.
Oh, you're so right, lad. Incidentally, if you need a good car, I can get you one at a very reasonable...
Diogenes?
Oh, sorry, I got carried away.
Well, I didn't mean to barge in on you like this, Rembrandt.
Well, don't be ridiculous, dear.
No, don't be. Think nothing of it, lad. I'm on my way now. Rembrandt and I were only discussing the situation of the world.
And to what conclusion did you come?
It stinks. The bottom of the afternoon to the boss of you.
Oh, he's quite a boy.
Yes, I'm very fond of Diogenes. What brings you around this way, dear?
Jack Frost.
Yes. Now, getting on with our conversation, what brings you around this way, dear?
Jack Frost.
Maybe the needle's bad. Shall we try again?
I know how you feel. I reacted the same way myself. I'll give you the pocket-sized edition. The brownstone department store is without a Santa Claus helper, Jack Frost. He didn't show up for work this morning. I said I'd find them a new one.
That's very sweet of you, Dove.
Very dumb of me, Dove. I know of only one character who even remotely looks like Jack Frost. I met him up in Alaska when I was traveling with the USO.
Won't do you much good down here, would it?
No. That's why I came to see you, Rembrandt. Don't you keep a cross file on models you've used in photography?
As a matter of fact, I do. Here in this little book. Let's see. Mm-hmm. Men, thin, extremely. I have just one, Pietro Tarantello. Would you care for a Sicilian Jack Frost?
In Sicily, yes. Hey, what's that?
Where?
On that chair next to you.
Oh, that's the afternoon paper, dear. Diogenes left it, I imagine.
Yes, but on the front page. Here's the whole story about the missing Jack Frost on the front page. Ooh, what he got in his Christmas stocking. A slug through the head.
That's no way to treat Jack Frost.
And here's a picture of the guy, without his false icicles.
What the ham? Looks like he stepped right out of an 1890 Shakespearean play.
I hate to say this, Rembrandt, but he resembles you.
I take back what I said.
Rembrandt?
Divorce yourself from that tone of voice, Candy. I don't like it.
Rembrandt, I've got an idea.
You usually do.
You like little children.
Can't stand them.
You like to talk to people.
I abhor conversation.
You like to be charming.
Lost me charm.
Gay?
Lost me gay.
With the help of a few icicles, Ducky, you're going to be Jack Frost. Rembrandt fought, he argued, he paced the floor, he had the vapors, he fainted. I brought him to. I won the argument. I got my friend Myra Fisher on the phone and informed her that one R. Watson would assume the role of jolly Jack Frost on the morrow. She was delighted. I couldn't say the same for Rembrandt. Then I went home. I was greeted by a sound very much like that of a phone ringing. Using my keen instincts, I figured it was the phone. It was. Hello, Candy Matson.
How do you do, Miss Matson? Allow me to introduce myself.
Aloud.
My name is Burke, Prentice Burke. I'm the first assistant vice president of the Brownstone.
Brownstone? Oh, yes, that's a store of some kind, isn't it?
Yes. Now, the reason for my call... There has been, shall I say, a rather unfortunate occurrence in our store today.
So I read.
I need the help of a professional sleuth. You were highly recommended by the head of our advertising department, Miss Myra Fisher.
Uh-huh. The thick buttons.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, no need to. You didn't do anything. Okay, care to talk to me now, Mr. Burke?
Oh, I'd much rather have you come down to my office, Miss Batson. This matter is of an extremely confidential nature.
I'm your girl, then, figuratively speaking. How long will you be there?
As long as necessary. That's up to you.
Very well. I'll be there in half an hour if I can find a place to park. I only had time for a fast change, so I made it from Andiscray to Taboo. I sniffed at it and felt I was on the right scent. Then I climbed in my car, drove down Kearney Street, waved a crisp single under the nose of a hotel doorman, and had my car taken care of. Then into the brownstone and up to Mr. Prentice Burke's office. I flipped a hip past the girl's secretary and walked on in. Burke was waiting for me, that was obvious. I could tell by the expression on his face. It was worried look number 12B. How do you do, Mr. Burke? I'm Candy Matson.
Sit down, won't you?
Thank you. Now, our subject is what?
A man named Jordan.
That's on another network.
I beg your pardon?
Oh, that's all right. Now, about this Jordan.
Ralph Jordan, to be exact.
Well, that's a relief. For a moment, I thought you wanted to talk about Jack Frost.
That's just it. He was Jack Frost.
Uh-oh. Me and my big mouth.
He was working here up until yesterday afternoon. Maybe you read about it. He was found shot today.
Yes, I read about it.
That's the reason I've called you.
Why didn't you have your own store detectives take over, Mr. Burke?
No. That would never do. I want no one in the store to know what's going on.
Ah, intrigue.
Quite possibly. I have reason to suspect that Jordan was killed by someone in our employ. I want to find out who that someone was before the police do and get it splashed all over the front pages.
Publicity, can't you say?
Business has been off all year, and any bad breaks in the press would hurt us that much more.
Maybe you've got a point there, I don't know.
I know I have.
Okay, I'll take the job. You say you have a suspicion. What is it?
Well, nothing tangible. It's just a feeling I have.
Oh, that's a big help. Well, I'll mush around and see what I can pick up. I'll bill you tomorrow for my first day's work. It's much easier to sustain a friendship on a daily basis. I left Burke looking as though someone had just called his store a bazaar. It was closing time, so I hefted my way through the crush and retrieved my car from the doorman. The Hall of Justice is right on my way home, so I decided to drop in on my old pal Mallard, Inspector Ray Mallard of San Francisco Homicide. A nice guy to serve coffee to on Sunday mornings if you could ever lasso him. I never could get strong enough rope.
Candy, what brings you around here?
I hate to have my Christmas ruined so early. What about that Jack Frost character?
Oh, yeah. Poor guy got it good.
Where'd you find him?
In his apartment over on 17th. He lived near Seal Stadium. Why so interested, Candy?
Rembrandt's a dead ringer for the guy.
I still don't get that.
The gal who's head of advertising for the Brownstone was going out of her head for another Jack Frost. I talked Rembrandt into taking the job.
Oh,
does sound funny, doesn't it? Bring me up to date, Mallory. Did you get any dope on the killing?
Nothing but a .45 slug out of the guy's wall. Ballistics is checking it now.
Nothing else?
If I did, I should tell you.
No, I guess not.
This goes beyond just a normal curiosity, Candy. What are you drilling for?
Oh, it's only that I'm worried about Rembrandt. I got him the job. I'm responsible. I wouldn't want anything to happen to him.
Ask a silly question, Mallard, and you get a silly answer. Okay, let's forget it. How's about dinner tonight?
I've fought this thing long enough. Okay.
Candy.
Yes, Mallard?
We've known each other a good long time, haven't we?
That's right. Ever since the fair on Treasure Island.
We've had our little quarrels, little misunderstandings.
Oh, but they never seem to last long, though, do they?
No. That's why I feel I have every right to ask you a question.
Wait, yes, I'd say you do, Mallard.
Maybe I'll ask you tonight.
No, go ahead. Now's as good a time as any.
Perhaps it is, Candy. You get around a lot. You meet people. Do you know where I can get a couple of tickets to the Rose Bowl game?
My brain lit up like a Roman candle. I stormed for the door, turned back, stood there, my jaw waggling helplessly. Then I stuck my tongue out at Mallard and left. It was the only thing I could think of doing. Oh, he can make me so mad. But inside half an hour after I got home, I started to laugh. Felt much better. Just as I was puttering around getting ready, the apartment buzzer buzzed. That Mallard, much too early. But I was wrong. It wasn't Mallard. Well, Myra, what a surprise. Do come in, won't you?
No, thanks, Candy. A friend of mine's waiting in his car outside. He's driving me home.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can't stay for a moment?
So am I, dear. I just dropped by to leave this. Merely a little token of thanks for getting me off the hook.
Oh, Myra, there wasn't any need to do that.
Just a few pair of old stockings, dear. Getting me my new Jack Frost means more than you know. Here, please take them, along with my very deepest thanks.
Thanks so much. A girl can always use them. Are you all set with my friend, Mr. Watson?
Oh, yes. He came in this afternoon and filled out his withholding tax and so on. Very nice.
I think you'll find him very efficient, Myra.
Oh,
what's the matter?
Pardon me. I didn't mean to frighten you.
Oh, Mallard. Oh,
silly of me. I must have jumped a foot.
Oh, that's all right. He frightens me, too. Myra, I'd like to have you meet Inspector Mallard. Inspector, Miss Fisher.
How do you do?
Oh, fine, thank you, now that I've caught my breath. Do forgive me, Candy, but I must rush. See you soon, I hope.
Tomorrow, Myra. I'll be down to see how my lad's doing as Jack Frost. Thanks for the stockings.
Well, aren't you going to invite me in?
No, I'm not. Here's my coat right here. What's our hurry? Come on, let's go. I'm starved.
I thought we could have a cocktail here before we left.
You thought wrong. Two tickets to the Rose Bowl. From now on, you earn your cocktails, Mallard.
All right, let's take a quick break. from Candy Matson with Jack Frost. We'll have more in just a few minutes. Someone has identified Lisa's song, and we'll play it in a little bit. But first, these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Esmeralda. Thank you, Roger. And it is hour two of the WGN Radio Theater, playing all your favorite radio shows every single Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. And we have our full schedule up. In fact, I think the schedule goes all the way, might go all the way through the end of the year on WGNRadioTheater.com. Could that be possible? Am I that far advanced with the schedule?
Well,
with your help, of course. Could that even be remotely possible?
It's remotely possible.
That I'm through all of Christmas and all of Thanksgiving shows and all that? Yeah, check it out. Go to WGNRadioTheater.com. Our schedule is up there. I'm going to look, too. All right, we have a moment, so I thought maybe we would play Lisa's song, right? Lisa, someone guessed your song. I can't believe it.
I'm happy.
All right, here is Lisa's favorite song from 1974. What is this? I thought someone was checking my heartbeat through a stethoscope.
You're ruining it.
This song.
Give it a moment.
It's not good.
It's so good. Let it go. Ooh. Ooh.
We can lay our own tracks in this.
Hey, rock and roll, rock on, ooh, my soul. Hey, yeah, boogie-doo, did ya? Hey, shout, summertime blues, jump up and down in your blue suede shoes. Hey, yeah, you rock and roll, rock on. And where do we go from here? Which is a way that's clear. Still looking for that blue jean, baby queen.
All right, there you have it. David Essex with Rock On, Lisa's favorite song from 1974. I don't like songs that they don't tell a story. Like, that's just a...
You don't know.
He's not telling a story. It's just like,
yes,
blue,
he is.
Suede, I don't get it.
You
I don't did, like,
you listen like, to like 30 seconds.
And there's no story there.
There's
I like
a story,
you know?
You like,
mine, the guy's driving down the road, his hands are wet on the wheel. He's like going somewhere and doing something. Your guy's like, rock and roll.
No, it's a great song.
Don't like
it. Okay, you guys let me know if you love the song or if I'm just
like
crazy.
But I like Roger's song. Nobody's guessed it yet, though.
Not for Roger.
Text in if you want to guess Roger's song, 312-981-7200. In the meantime, let's get back to Candy Matson.
We went downstairs, and as I locked the front door, a car was just driving off. It was Myra, and she waved. And driving, if these tired old eyes hadn't deceived me, was Mr. Prentice Burke, vice president of the Brownstones. Well... Oh, well, Mallard and I climbed into our car and drove out to the Cliff House. It was that kind of an evening. We had dinner, and after, I suggested we walk a bit. The night was crisp and clear, and the evening star was hanging out above the dark waters of the Pacific like an iridescent Japanese lantern. We cut across a little road above Sutro Baths, where an old car barn had once stood, and worked our way over the cliffs and stood high above Land's End. It was exhilarating.
Penny for your thoughts, Candy.
Inflation is still here.
All right, make it 2 pennies.
Well, I was just thinking, Mallard, dear. When you see a star in the sky, soft water below, feel Christmas in the air, how can there be violence in the world?
An age-old question, pal. One I can't answer. I'm too small. Hey, you're cold. I'd better put my arm around you.
Mallard, no.
What's the matter?
The headlights from that automobile are shining right down on us, and we... Mallard.
Candy, what's wrong?
Got your flashlight with you?
Sure. Also, my gun and my handcuffs. Anything else we need? A mortar, maybe?
The lights from that car. They shone on something. Down there, under that tree.
Oh, Candy, just for once, can't you stop digging up a mystery? Be human?
I am being human. Come on, Mallard. I want to see what's under that tree. We scrambled around through the brush, slipped into some sliding sand, and rode the crest down to the tree. It wasn't easy to get around some of those brambles, but get there I fully intended doing, because what I saw was red, bright red.
You okay, Candy?
Nothing that a new pair of nylons won't fix. Shoot the flashlight over this way a bit, Miller. There. That's it. Now, do you think I'm dreaming things up?
What is it?
Wait, I hold it up.
Wow. Looks like some kind of a costume.
Right. And look, if those aren't bloodstains, I'm a Labrador Retriever.
No, you're Candy Matson. Those are bloodstains.
How was your boy dressed when you found him?
Torn slacks, sweater, shoes, no socks.
This was most likely his costume, then.
Yeah. Don't move around too much, Candy. I want to have a good look at the ground.
Hey, what are you doing down there?
Who's that?
The police. Now get up here and don't try any tricks.
That's all right, officer. This is Inspector Mallard, homicide.
Oh, sorry, Inspector.
That's all right. Stay right where you are. We'll be right up.
Well, this is a break, Candy. I want you to drive me to a phone. I'll leave the officer here to guard the place. You can go home. I've got work to do here, okay?
Yeah, sure. For once, we had dinner before you had a chance to break the date. This baby was hard to reconstruct. Was the guy knocked off out there at Land's End, or was he bumped off at his apartment, the killer driving way out to the beach and hiding the costume? Only time would tell. I went home, climbed into bed, and logged about 8 hours, enough to give me fuel for the next day. In the morning, I went down to the brownstone. The shoppers were already swarming through the place. I spotted a floor walker and strolled over to him. Pardon me, sir. I said, pardon me, sir.
I'm very busy, young lady. Make it as brief as possible.
You do work here, don't you?
Of course.
You are the floor walker assigned to this section?
That is correct. Come to the point, please.
Well, I've a good mind to report you.
As you wish. As I said, I'm very busy. Now, what is it you wanted to know?
The words are like gall in my mouth now, but where do I find Jack Frost?
Right over there, in the back, 2 aisles over.
Thank you.
Not at all.
Very much. Of all the high-handed characters, people like that make me steam. I was getting up a full head of dander, but it simmered out before I had a chance to boil over. Because as I rounded a corner, I saw Frosty Boy, or Rembrandt if you choose, up on his platform with the cutest little blonde kid sitting in his lap.
Well, well, well. Look who we have here. Great big boy. Hello there, son.
Hello, Jack Frost.
What is your name?
Topper.
Topper. My, what a fine name. How old are you, Topper?
5 and a half.
5 and a half. Well, you must go to school, Topper. Which one?
Garfield.
Garfield. That's a good school. Now, tell me, what would you like to have me tell Santa Claus to bring you for Christmas, Topper?
An electric train and a baseball bat, and I'd like to be in the seals for Lefty O'Doul.
Well, I'll see what I can do to arrange that, Topper. I'll tell Santa Claus. Bye now.
Goodbye, and thank you, and Merry Christmas.
I hope you can make the boy's wish come true. O'Doul could use him.
Candy, oh, I'm so glad you're here, Doug. Look around into the back room for a moment. I've got to talk to you.
Aren't you working, Frosty Boy?
I got 10 minutes off every hour. I'll take the break now. Right around there, Candy.
Okay, I'll see you in a moment. What's the matter, Rembrandt? Even under those icicles, you look warm under the collar.
Here, look at this. Every now and then, one of these Muppets toddles up to me with a Christmas letter in its hand. A little red-headed girl handed me this about half an hour ago. I've been shaking ever since.
Let me see. Dear Jack Frost, a word to the wise is sufficient. When you take your lunch hour, keep on going. Don't come back. Otherwise, you'll meet the same fate as your predecessor. Just about what I expected.
Candy. You mean to say that you're deliberately using me as a sacrificial lamb?
By no means, Ducky. Go ahead, take your lunch. Then do as the note says, keep on going. As a matter of fact, why don't you take off now? I'll meet you at your place in about an hour.
It's the best news I've heard since Nelson's victory at Trafalgar.
I whipped upstairs, reported to Prentice Burke, got my first day's check, and on my way out told his secretary she better get Burke some smelling salts. Then I went back down on the floor again. Sure enough, there was my boy, the floor walker. I wanted to have a few more words with him.
Oh, you again.
If you don't mind. I was just up to see Miss Myra Fisher. She wasn't in. Have you seen her down here?
No, and what's more, I won't see her all day. She phoned saying she was feeling ill. Most inconsiderate, I must say, during the holiday rush.
Yes, I must. Could you give me her address? She's a friend of mine. I've got to see her.
Her address? Well, yes. I write it down here on one of my cards for you. Myra Fisher, 227F, Union Street. There.
Thank you. You're so kind. I had all the ammunition I wanted. A check signed by Burke and a card written by the floorwalker. His name was Simon Liggett. With that, I ducked into a phone booth and called Mallard.
Homicide, Mallard speaking.
Good boy. This is Candy. What did you find out at Land's End last night?
A couple of very juicy footprints. They give us nothing.
Did you make any casts of them?
Why, sure.
Mind if I borrow a couple of them for a few hours, Mallard?
Well, I don't see how it'll hurt. Sure, okay.
Thanks, Mallard, dear. I'll be by in a moment. And I want to borrow you, too. I stopped by the Hall of Justice, got the cast of the footprints, shoved Mallard into the car, and then picked up Rembrandt. The thing was only a hunch, but my hunches have paid off, so I never ignore them. First, we went out to an address on Fifth Avenue near Clement. We got in the back door and went to work. Nothing made sense there. So we drove over to Reseda Way in the marina. Again, we got in and did some sleuthing. This time, we hit the jackpot. A pair of shoes in the closet matched the casts we had brought with us. Rembrandt, go out in the kitchen and see if this place has any ketchup.
I'm not hungry, Dob, but I'll look. What are you up to, Candy? We've got enough to swing a case here.
I'm working for a voluntary confession, Mallard. Tell me, what was the position that the Jack Frost was in when you found him dead?
In a chair, like that one. His head slumped down on his chest.
Good.
Here's the concept, Doug. What are you putting it on?
You.
What?
Without the bun or relish, Ducky. Sit down there, will you, Rembrandt? Now, just go limp and let your head hang down. That's it. Now for a little seasoning.
Oh, Candy, you're smearing me with this sticky stuff.
And all for the sake of art. Hold still. There. How does he look, Mallard?
Why, all the... Candy looks like the same guy, the real thing.
Good. Now, Rembrandt, you just sit like that. Don't move. Mallard, you duck into that closet over there and I'll hide in here. We've got a good view of the front door from both places. Okay?
Okay. There are times, Candy, when I admit I admire your genius.
Genius, schmenius. Come on, let's hide. The golden shafts of sun splashing in through the window from the ocean slowly turned pink, then purple, and into twilight. The minutes ticked on. Once... Bless you, but quiet, though, Rembrandt. You'll muss up your ketchup. 5 minutes. 10. Then we heard muffled footsteps coming down the hall and a key inserted in the lock of the apartment door.
No! Oh, no! It can't be! The old fool I killed! No, no!
Okay, buddy, that'll be about enough.
Oh, no.
Get him, Mallard. He's ducking.
I'll get him.
Nice tackle, Mallard.
All right, Mac. You going to remain peaceful, or do I have to give you a little tap?
No, no. I'll be quiet. You got me. I did it. I did it to both of them. I killed them. I killed them. I killed both of them.
Both of them?
Yeah. Look behind the sofa. The sofa, the girl, Jack Frost, the sofa.
The sofa? Wait a minute, Mallard.
I had to do it. Oh, goodness. Oh, they were going to do it.
Oh, Mallard.
More trouble, Candy?
I killed both of them. I'm glad I
killed. Yes. An old friend of mine. The late Myra Fisher. The whole thing was jealousy. Not the jealousy of a man for a woman, but the jealousy of a man for a job. Simon Liggett had been with the Brownstone for almost 20 years. He'd worked himself up from the stock boy to a place where he'd been promised the job of head of advertising and promotion. He almost got it, except at the last moment, Prentice Burke gave the position to Myra Fisher. That had only been 2 weeks before. He knew that Myra was on a probationary term, so he did everything he could to undermine her. Little things like changing ad copy, sending out false stories to newspapers. He figured that if he could keep the store without a Santa Claus helper, he'd break Myra's back and get the job by the first of the year. He paid a visit to the first Jack Frost and tried to bribe him into quitting, but the guy would have none of it. There was a struggle. Liggett lost his head and whipped out a gun and shot him. He was still in his costume, so Liggett stripped him, put some old clothes on him, drove out to Land's End and ditched his costume. Then he felt sure there would be no Jack Frost the next day. But that's when Myra met me and I talked Rembrandt into taking over. By this time, Liggett was in a frenzy and would stop at nothing. He trailed Myra and Burke to Myra's home, killed her, took her body over to his place, and ditched it behind the sofa. The next morning, he wrote a note to Rembrandt and gave it to one of the little girls waiting in line to see him. Fear and envy were taking their toll on the poor guy's mind. I wanted to compare the handwriting, so I had Burke write me a check and Liggett write Myra's address on a card. Also, we had the footprint cast. Between the two, everything pointed toward Liggett. That's when I staged my little parlor charade with Rembrandt playing the part of a corpse. The sight, with Rembrandt's resemblance to the dead Jack Frost, would shatter anybody into a confession. But Christmas, in spite of everything, is a lovely time of year. And there is a Santa Claus. Three of them for me, as a matter of fact. Mr. Prentice Burke, who sent me a very nice check for my efforts. Rembrandt Watson, who, out of sheer love for the job, went back to playing Jack Frost for all the kids at the Brownstone. And last but not least, Inspector Ray Mallard. He gave me a Christmas sock right on my mouth, just where any well-placed Christmas sock should go.
Listen again next week at this same time. For excitement and adventure, just dial...
Candy Matson, and a Merry Christmas to you all. Yukon 28209.
Heard tonight were Helen Klebe as Myra Fisher, Lou Tobin as Prentice Burke, and John Grover as Simon Liggett. Jack Thomas plays the role of Rembrandt Watson, and Henry Leff is heard as Inspector Mallard. The program stars Natalie Masters as Candy and is written and produced by Monty Masters. Sound effects were created by Bill Brownell and Jay Rendon. Eloise Rowan is heard at the organ. The characters in tonight's story are entirely fictitious, with the exception of the part of Topper, which was played by himself. Any resemblance to actual people is purely coincidental. The program came to you from San Francisco. Dudley Manlove speaking. You are tuned for the stars on NBC.
We had Candy Matson right there. That's a broadcast from December 19th, 1949. Jack Frost, starring Natalie Masters. Roger's in the studio here. What's the matter, Roger?
Roger.
I was doing the bing bong bing with my neck, and I think I bonged my bing.
What? You
binged
bing
and bonged
bing?
It?
With the NBC.
Oh, bing bong.
Well, that'll teach you, Roger.
So nobody has guessed Roger's song yet.
Oh,
I'm surprised.
That's a pretty good one.
We all like it.
Hints?
No.
Carl's very bossy. You have
no
to listen
hints.
To him.
All right.
Absolutely
fine.
No hints.
He's got a lot of opinions.
Hold it up to the camera.
No. All right. Roger's song
really
is, and it's a great song.
Awesome.
If you have any idea what Roger's favorite song from 1974 might be, text us now, 312-981-7200. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it's hour three. Thanks for staying up late for us and for thanks for staying up late with us. I should say, not for us, with us here on the WGN Radio Theater. I can't believe nobody has guessed Roger's song yet.
I don't understand. It's a great, great song.
Here's a hint.
Roger's chomping at the bit to
No hints. Everyone has to play by the same rules.
We're just going to send out messages like telepathically.
Let's telepathically do that. Ready? Okay. Lisa has two brains.
How about if we do
and I have one brain.
What's the
Do you remember what his song is?
Mine's a little warped.
You can choose a letter.
No.
Like the game show.
No.
I'm going to send out a message.
Okay.
All right, hang on. Oh, God. That was powerful. Holy.
I did it.
Holy moly.
I did it.
Someone will get it now,
for sure. So. I think we're on to something.
What kind of message?
Yeah.
Bullwinkle is a... Oh, sorry. Wrong kind of message.
All right. In this hour, it is Murder Clinic, a good detective, female detective adventure, and it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV series Atypical, focusing on the life of an 18-year-old boy who is on the autistic spectrum.
Mm-hmm. What do they win?
They are going to win two tickets to see the musical Hair, which is playing right now at the Mercury Theater Chicago.
Yeah?
Long,
beautiful hair.
Yes, that one. That's the only song you know.
That the one?
That's the one.
Oh, Aquarius.
Right. This is the dawning
Aquarius,
of Let the Sunshine
Age
In.
Of Aquarius.
You know, it's an iconic kind of a play.
Aquarius.
I saw it. It was a lot of fun.
I can't get that high.
I know
Aquarius.
That.
Well, that's pretty high.
You're really good, Carl.
What, Roger?
Please don't do that. My ears hurt.
I broke some glass. I heard
dog
some glass.
Down the street.
Okay, so that's good. Hair, right?
Yep, two tickets playing right now, Mercury Theater Chicago.
Call us 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She was one of the stars of Single White Female.
Don't make me come get you!
All right, who is that? 312-981-7200. As soon as you tell us who that is, call us in and you could win Hair tickets. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Don't make me come get you!
And we have Kathy on the line. Hi, Kathy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Great. Who is that actress?
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
You are right. Jennifer Jason Leigh is the correct answer. And we are thrilled to give you two tickets to see Hair, the tribal love rock musical. It's playing right now at the Mercury Theater Chicago. It's running through September 17th. Carl seems to know all of the music. So either you could go to Mercury Theater and see the show, check it out at mercurytheaterchicago.com, or you could just ask Carl to sing a few tunes for you, whichever you think might work out for you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe both.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good idea.
I work
Carl?
Cheap. I work very
cheap. He sure
cheap.
Does. Thank you for calling in, and we hope you love the show.
I think I will. Thank you.
Take
Thanks,
care.
Kathy. Congratulations. Kathy's a big winner. She's going to see Hair. Hey, Roger, you know what? Do you know
Give me a head with her.
Do you know who Jennifer Jason Leigh's father was? He's passed now. He died tragically.
Christopher Leigh.
No.
No.
No. Completely different spelling. Leigh.
Oh,
L-E-I.
L-E-I-G-H. Wait, no. Who, the father?
Yeah, who was her father in real life? I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
He did a lot of war television, and he was on...
The Twilight Zone movie.
The Twilight Zone movie. And he was killed during making that film.
Right.
You know who it was?
The name is...
Vic.
But I know who you're... Vic Morrow.
Vic Morrow, yeah. Her father was a very, very famous actor.
Yeah.
He was in the television series Combat.
Right.
So what happened during the film?
Well, he was carrying
the helicopter scene. And he was
John Landis, I believe, was directing that.
Yeah, and they were reenacting a scene where it takes place and he's in the water,
like Cambodia
and
or something.
Helicopter crashes and the blades. Yeah.
Well, what happened was the helicopter was not supposed to crash.
Right.
It actually hit a power line. And crashed, and one of the propellers decapitated him, and I think killed the two little...
And that's a lovely thing for us to discuss.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
I'm so sorry I asked you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's tragic. But yeah, that was her father, Vic Morrow.
Why didn't she take his last name? I wonder why.
I do not know. The and mother? As Johnny Carson would say, I did not know that, as you said last night. Yeah. And nobody seems to know your song either.
There's literally at least 30, 40 in the last 10 minutes. They keep coming
and
in,
all
and
wrong.
None
Can
of
I
them
just
are
say
right.
One?
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes, you may.
Hang on a second. Thank you, Roger. It was very nice talking to you.
I got my mic off.
All right, it's time now for Murder Clinic. This was a good series that came to radio in 1942. It was a collection of stories from the greatest detectives in fiction. Each week, a different mystery author was highlighted, like Agatha Christie or John Dixon Carr or Edgar Wallace. And it came from New York, and it was on WOR. And it had great supporting New York actors like Charlotte Manson, Ian Martin, Paul Stewart, Ted DeCorsia, Alfred Shirley, Maurice Tarplin, and others. This is an episode from September 22, 1942. It's called A Scrap of Lace, and it stars Elizabeth Morgan. She plays a female detective on this program, and the detective's name is Rosetta Story. Here is part one now of Murder Clinic.
Murder Clinic, stories of the world's great detectives. Men against murder. Each week at this time, WOR Mutual turns the spotlight on one of the world's great detectives of fiction and invites you to listen to the story of his most exciting case. Tonight, Madame Rosica's story in The Scrap of Lace. Good evening, Madame Story. Your being at Murder Clinic is certainly a novelty.
You're surprised to see a woman detective, Mr. Knight?
That's right. And even more surprised to see a very beautiful detective. It's a queer business for a woman.
Most people think so, Mr. Knight. But you see, being a woman gives me one great advantage. My adversaries usually underestimate me.
Yes, I suppose they would. Now, what's the tale you're going to tell us, Madam Story?
It's called The Scrap of Lace. I chose it because it seems to me so unusual a crime. A strange story of jealousy and death. Of course you know the great family of Kruger who ruled New York society for generations. When Mrs. Peter John Kruger III died, her mantle descended as a matter of course to Mrs. Peter John Kruger IV. This beautiful and charming young woman, Mimi by name, inherited not only her mother-in-law's scepter, but also Teresa de Guillon. Teresa de Guillon was the first and certainly the greatest of social secretaries. The story begins one summer morning at Karras Woods, the enormous and rather monstrous Kruger estate in Upper Westchester. Mimi and Teresa de Guillon were together in the breakfast room.
Oh, Teresa, must we go to that dull dinner at the Bransoms tonight? I think I'll call it off.
Mimi, you simply can't do that. Hmm? The dinner's being given for you. I was most insistent that I be consulted about the other guests. After all, my dear, you have certain responsibilities. Your mother-in-law, Mrs. Kruger III...
Yes, I know. She was a paragon of the social virtues. She didn't mind being bored to death.
Oh, Mimi, you are so lax. What would you do without me?
You worry too much, Teresa. You're living in the past. Your little assistant, Louise Mayfield, could possibly take over very well.
Louise? Louise Mayfield? That child.
My dear Teresa, she's 21 and very competent. After all, you trained her.
Yes, and I am very fond of Louise. She's like a daughter to me. But take my place? Why, surely you're joking, my dear.
Oh, yes, yes, of course.
You know, Mimi, I'm a bit worried about Louise. She's been acting very odd lately. This party she's going to tonight, I have no idea where it is or who her hostess is to be.
Well, wherever it is, she'll have a better time than I will. You know, Teresa, I shouldn't be surprised if Louise has been acting strangely because she's trying to keep away from my handsome cousin, Jack Rowcliffe. She doesn't seem very grateful to you, Teresa, for arranging to marry him off to Vera McPeak.
Jack Rowcliffe and Vera McPeak are a splendid match. He has family, position. Vera is young. She can be molded. She can be taught.
Oh, certainly, yes. And her father has 100 millions. But I don't blame Jack for straying from the fold.
Louise is very lovely, and I found Vera a very trying guest. In fact, I find it all very trying.
Mr. Guillaume.
Oh, there's Louise. Louise, we're in the breakfast room. Come in here, my dear.
Good morning, Mrs. Kruger. Mrs. de Guillaume, did you want me this morning?
No, Louise, I did. Teresa insists we go to this dinner tonight. Jack and Vera are going with us. We'll be leaving around 7. Tell Jack, won't you?
Must I, Mrs. Kruger?
Mrs. Kruger has asked you to deliver a message. Do so, my dear.
Jack, I came only to tell you about the dinner.
Oh, Louise.
Please, must we go through all this again? Why don't you leave me alone?
Because I'm mad about you, Louise. Can't you understand? I'm in love with you. I want you to marry me.
You marry and support a wife? Don't be silly, Jack.
It does sound silly, doesn't it? But I'm changed, I tell you. You've changed me, Louise. I love you. There's nothing I wouldn't do for you.
And what about Vera McPeak? No, Jack. I'm afraid you've been bought, paid for, and delivered. Vera won't let you go so easily.
I'll tell her tonight that I'm through, Louise. I'll meet her at the dinner and tell her, and then I'll come back here to you.
Come back if you like, Jack.
Good, I'll be back at about...
But I won't be here.
Where are you going, Louise? Well, why don't you tell me? It's another man. I know it's another man. Who is it? Who is it?
This nonsense has gone far enough. What I do is my own business. Do you understand that, Jack?
No, it's my business. You're mine, Louise. Do you hear? You're mine. I'll have you or no one else will.
Jack, let go of my wrist.
Louise, tell me.
You're hurting me, please.
Louise, I want to know.
Let me go.
Well, Jack. Vera. You're making passes at the servants, I see.
Perhaps it's just as well you saw. You might as well have this out now.
Shut up. I can handle this. It's pretty easy to see what Miss Mayfield's little game is. She thinks she'll marry into the great Kruger clan. Well, let me tell you, Miss Mayfield, Jack hasn't got a cent to his name and never will have.
Vera, please.
I understand perfectly, Miss McPeak. I assure you, I have no ambitions in Mr. Roker's direction.
Quite the lady, aren't you, Miss Mayfield? Well, watch your step. Sure, I know what you all think of me. Vulgar, common. But let me tell you, we common Clay McPeaks from Pittsburgh know how to get what we want. And we know how to keep it. Think that over, Miss Mayfield. Think that over.
Yes, come in.
Mademoiselle, Miss Louise. Madame Kruger has sent me to help you dress for your engagement.
Come in, Lou. How thoughtful of Mrs. Kruger to send you, Suzanne. Have they gone?
But oui, the car she left long ago.
Oh, don't you see, we're not happy. Monsieur Jacques?
You say nothing. And Mademoiselle, his fiancée, the ugly one, she...
Oh, you see,
she very angry. Even Madame, she want not to go.
Well, let's not think of them, Suzanne. I'm happy, and I'm going to have a wonderful time.
Oh, Mademoiselle is très charmante, very lovely. It is a tryst you go to, n'est-ce pas? It is for your young man that your eyes shine so.
Maybe. You're too smart, Suzanne. But how do you think my young man will like me? How do I look?
Oh, ravishant, mademoiselle. He'll eat you up. You are so lovely.
Suzanne, you are a darling.
Yes, yes. Who is it?
A letter for Miss Mayfield.
Oh, thanks. It is a letter for you, mademoiselle.
For me? Well, it's a thick one, isn't it?
Oh, how lovely. What an exquisite handkerchief. Why, who could have sent it to me? Madame Kruger must have sent it. It is one of the 6 she bought in Paris. It is perfect, mademoiselle, for your costume, n'est-ce pas?
Oh, it's lovely. What a darling Mrs. Kruger is.
Oui, she is most generous. You are a caritist, no?
Of course.
Shall I put the perfume on it, mademoiselle?
No, thank you. I'll do it myself, Suzanne. Oh, just put that bottle of Gardenia perfume on my dressing table, please.
Oui, mademoiselle.
Now you can go, Suzanne. I won't need you anymore.
Merci, mademoiselle. Bon voyage, mademoiselle.
Good night, Suzanne, and thank you. Oh, it's so lovely. One more drop. Suzanne. Suzanne. Help me.
my years of experience, Mimi, I have never had to cope with anything so sordid.
Teresa, how can you think of appearances with Louise, that beautiful child, lying in there dead?
But I must think of them. After all, Dr. Plummer refuses to sign a death certificate.
That dole Fawful with his hints of foul play. Well,
maybe he's right, Vera.
What do you mean, Jack? What do you know of Louise Mayfield's death?
Well, I...
Stop wrangling, you two. Dr. Plummer was kind enough to give us 36 hours. He's risking a great deal going as far as that. Oh, why doesn't Madame Story get here? Are you sure you acted wisely in calling her in, Mimi?
Well, it was either she or the police. You said she had a reputation for discretion. Come in. Yes?
Madame Rosita Story and Miss Bella Brickley.
Thank heaven you're here, Madame Story. This is a terrible situation, terrible. Oh, but let me introduce you. I am Teresa de Guillon. This is Mrs. Peter John Kruger III.
How do you do?
Miss McPeak.
Hello.
Miss McPeak. Mr. Roclip.
How do you do, Mr. Roclip?
It was good of you to come so quickly, Madame Story. This unfortunate accident is likely to create a distressing scandal for Mrs. Kruger.
Accident, Mr. Guillon? From what you told me over the phone, I gathered Louise Mayfield had been murdered.
Nonsense. We don't know that, Madame Story. Nobody does. We only know Louise is dead. Poor child. We found her when we returned last night from our dinner party.
It is nonsense, Teresa, and you know it. Madame Story is perfectly right. It'd be very foolish to ask her help and not give her all the facts.
What facts, Mimi? Just because that old fossil of a Dr. Plummer won't give a death certificate. If you ask me, it's a nice little scheme to get you to hire this Story woman and split whatever she can manage to get out of you.
Vera!
That's an interesting idea, Miss McPeak, though I must confess that so simple and clever a scheme would never have occurred to me. But surely Dr. Plummer offered some other reason for refusing a death certificate.
Yes. He says... Oh, it's impossible, but... He says Louise was asphyxiated.
Old fool, there isn't a gas outlet in the house. How helpful of you to know that, Miss McPeak. You won't mind, will you, if I check for myself?
I don't mind what you do.
Oh, what's the use of all this? We've nothing to tell. All of us were at a dinner party 20 miles from here together. When we got home after 11, we found Louise... Well, that is, Miss Mayfield, dead.
I see. Mr. Guillon, when you phoned me, you said something about some missing object.
Yes. Suzanne, the maid, insists a lace handkerchief came in the mail for Louise as she was dressing to leave. When we phoned her, the handkerchief had disappeared.
Very interesting. Suppose I start, then, by questioning this maid, Suzanne. Maybe she can tell me more about this missing handkerchief. Good morning, Bella.
Good morning, Madame Story.
Typing last night's notes, I see.
Yes. Say, you look worried. What is it?
Oh, how can one look out at that peaceful garden and realize that in this house there's someone carrying the mark of Cain on their soul?
And you believe Louise Mayfield's death was not a natural one? That she was murdered?
No doubt of it. Bella, that girl was asphyxiated.
Oh, how horrible. So young and so full of life.
Yes, isn't it? And it's our job to find out who killed her. Have you finished typing those notes you took at our interminable interviews last night?
Not quite. I'm almost finished.
Well, then I think I'll step out in the terrace. Maybe the fresh air will help me think.
Something is bothering you.
Yes, Bella. What happened to that lace handkerchief Louise Mayfield received in the mail? I'm sure that was the thing that killed her. I must find it. Will you call me when you're through with those notes, please?
All right, that is the first portion of Murder Clinic from September 22nd, 1942, A Scrap of Lace, starring Elizabeth Morgan. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. Somebody did identify Roger's favorite song from 1974. So the contest is officially over. We'll tell you what Roger's favorite song is in just a few minutes, but first these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolfe.
All right, well, someone did get Roger's song. It took a long time.
Yeah, it took almost the whole night.
Yeah, but somebody did guess it. So here is Roger Badish's favorite song from 1974.
Ooh.
Billy Preston. That is Roger's favorite song, Nothing from Nothing. Guess what, Lisa?
It leaves nothing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
I know.
There you have it. And now I don't know why that was so tough. That's a great song.
It sure is.
I remember listening to that song back in my when I had my Italian horn still before I gave it to that girl that never kissed me and never
I
gave
really
it back.
I really should have gotten you that for your birthday.
Italian horn?
Yeah, that would have been good.
I would wear it, definitely.
All right, Christmas is around the corner. I'll keep it
in mind. Don't be cheap. Don't get the little tiny one.
Don't be cheap.
Mine was like a big honking one.
Don't be cheap.
It was like this big.
Don't get me cheap.
Like they have the little tiny ones. Don't give me a little one. Give me the big one.
Is that how you like it?
You
really
know?
Big?
Well, I'd like it to be like maybe, I don't know, what is that, 2-3 inches?
About a foot.
All right. So she's out there somewhere. She knows who she is, too.
I know you're still aggravated.
I can't remember her name, though.
Yeah.
I don't remember her name.
We don't care.
You know? anyway. All right. So we're listening to Murder Clinic. Let's go back to 1942 for the conclusion.
Madam Story, you come out and shame the flowers and dim the sunlight.
You always make such pretty speeches, even so early in the morning, Mr. Roakley.
Ah, beautiful lady, you remember my name.
Yours would be a difficult name to forget, Mr. Roakley.
Hmm?
Thanks to the Rotary Review and the Picture Magazine.
Oh, that. You know, I had no hope of ever meeting you. I can't aspire to your circle. Much too clever.
It all depends. I should say that you were quite clever enough for your own purposes, Mr. Roakley.
I'm just a lightweight.
I wonder. I see you're standing out under her window. That is Miss Mayfield's room up there, isn't it?
Yes. Well, that was her room.
Ivy-clad walls, old English ivy. Sturdy and strong, too. I wonder why the vines are so torn and broken.
Oh, are they? I hadn't noticed.
You loved Louise Mayfield very much, didn't you?
Yes. I loved her more than anything in life.
And she?
Oh, why should she care for me? What am I? Nothing but a wastrel. She was in love with someone else. I know it. I could tell. But if I'd known who it was, I...
Why didn't you tell me, Mr. Rowcliffe? You'd left your dinner party and came back here last night.
How did you know that I did?
I didn't. You just told me. Thank you.
Well, there, you see, I told you you're too clever for me.
What time was it when you got here?
Well, I don't know. It was about 9:30, I think.
I see. You came around back here in the garden. You saw a light in her window. You called her. Got no answer. And you climbed that ivy up to her window, didn't you?
Well, who saw me?
Nobody, as far as I know. That broken ivy tells its own story, but not all of it. Tell me, what did you do when you got up there?
I suppose you're thinking that I killed her. I wouldn't blame you if you did. I don't care much if you do. I've got nothing
more... Please, please, Mr. Oakley.
I'm sorry. Well, I went in and found her lying there on the floor, dead. And like the coward I am, I got scared. How could I explain my being there? So I climbed down again the way I went up and drove back to Quaker Ridge. I suppose you don't believe me.
Suppose I say I reserve judgment. Now, will you give me the handkerchief that you took from Louise Mayfield's hand?
And you're a wizard. How did you know that?
It's obvious. I suppose that you took it as a remembrance of her.
Yes, I did. It was the last thing she had touched. Here it is.
Madam Story, could you come into the office a moment?
Certainly, Bella. We'll continue this talk later, Mr. Roakliffe. Will you excuse me now, please?
So this letter was pushed under the door. Did you open it, Bella?
No. I saw it was addressed to Louise Mayfield, so I called you.
I see. It's postmarked Briarcliffe. Here's a notation on the envelope in pencil. Not a very literate correspondent, Bella. If you want to buy any more info about this letter, we can make a deal. I'll drop around at 11. Well, we have long to wait. Now, let's read the letter. Darling, I can hardly wait till Tuesday night when I'll see you again. I'm moving heaven and earth to arrange things so we'll be together for always. All my love, dear. It's signed J.
J? That must be Jack Roakliffe.
In the light of what we know of their relationship, does it sound like Jack Rowcliffe?
No, that's stupid of me. But the initial.
It could be the J stands for John. Peter John Kruger.
Uh-huh.
This must be our mysterious correspondent now. Come in.
Well, ladies, here I am. Johnny on the spot, like I says. Know we do business?
You're the Kruger chauffeur, aren't you? Mr.
Jargon's the name. Chauffeur and bodyguard.
I'm sure you're efficient in both departments, Mr. Gargan. But why the bodyguard?
Well, it's like this. The Krugers are important people, see?
Mm-hmm.
They're likely to be bothered by cranks and other undesirable citizens, get it? They need protection. And I'm the guy that can protect them.
Yes, I can see that, Gargan. But now, about this letter.
Yeah, that's right. Well, do I sing or don't I?
That depends on your song, Gargan. First, tell me. How did you manage to get hold of this letter?
Well, it's like this. I always get the mail, see? And I always deliver it. But yesterday, Mrs. Kruger and the old dame are with me. I go in and get the mail, and I look through it to see if there's something for me. And I see this letter. When I come out to the car, Mrs. Kruger says, give me the mail. I hands it to her. And when I get it back, this letter ain't with the others. Well, I don't think much about it till last night when this Mayfield dame is bumped off. Then I begin to smell a rat. And this morning, I did a little mooching around. And here it is.
Very graphic, Gargan.
How's that?
Oh, skip it. Now, what further information have you to give us, Gargan?
I can tell you who sent that letter to the Mayfield dame.
So? How much?
Half a G.
$500? That's an expensive song, Gargan.
Ah, nuts. You can put it on the expense account.
You're right. Nuts it is. The $500 is yours.
Thanks.
Here you are. Now... who sent this letter to Louise Mayfield?
Well, it was the one...
Gargan! Madam Story, is he dead?
Yes,
the shot came through that window.
But why?
To keep him from telling us who sent that letter to Louise. Help me put him in that closet over there.
Rizik, I won't let you. You can't. You've got to report it.
If I report it now, the police would interfere with all my plans. I need 24 hours.
You're risking your reputation.
We've taken risks before.
But this is concealing a murder. Why do you need 24 hours?
To learn the secret of this, Bella.
Why... well, that's one of Mrs. Kruger's handkerchiefs.
No, Bella. It's the handkerchief. The one Rowcliffe found on Louise Mayfield's body. I'm staking my reputation on this little scrap of lace.
Madam Story, Potter is back.
Oh, that's good, Bella. Did he bring back the handkerchief from the laboratory report?
Yes, here they are.
Hmm. Just as I thought. Oh, what a horrible use for such a lovely thing. This handkerchief was the murder weapon, Bella.
But how could it have been?
Because our murderer knew that Louise Mayfield used gardenia toilet water.
But can we find out who sent it?
I rather think we can. Bella, get those four lace handkerchiefs that Suzanne got for me from Mrs. Kruger.
What are you going to do now?
Now, my dear Bella, I'm going out to present a noose to a murderer. Mr. Rowcliffe, I wanted to return this handkerchief to you for safekeeping. I'll want it back tomorrow morning. I don't know how at present. But I feel this handkerchief will be the means of proving who killed Louise Mayfield. So guard it carefully.
Well, I'll do that. You can depend on me, Madam Story.
Thank you, Mr. Rowcliffe. Miss McPeak, the greatest proof that I'm not against you is that I'm going to ask you to keep this handkerchief for me. The most important piece of evidence I have. I have no assurance the murderer would not kill me to get it back. But it would never be supposed that I'd given it to you to guard. Will you keep it for me until tomorrow morning?
No, don't worry. I'll keep it safe.
Thank you, Miss McPeak. Mrs. Kruger, what I came to see you...
What?
No, it's not. It's the handkerchief. It's the one that was sent to Louise Mayfield.
Where'd you get it?
Well, I can't tell you that now, but I'm afraid it was the cause of her death.
Oh, how horrible.
What I'm going to ask you to do is to hold it for me, just until tomorrow morning.
You
Mr. Guillon, you can help.
What is the real situation, Madame Story?
Oh, I wish I knew. I suspect, but I have no proof. I can go no further without the assistance from the chemists.
Whom do you suspect?
Oh, you know.
I'm afraid I do.
Well, what I want you to do is to keep this dreadful handkerchief for me until tomorrow morning. Mrs. Kruger, I have asked you, Mr. Guillon, Miss McPeak, and Mr. Rowcliffe to meet me here this morning in order that we may determine who murdered Louise Mayfield.
What do you mean?
You know, Madam Story? You know who killed her?
I believe I do, Mrs. Kruger, but I hope to prove it. I know that lace handkerchief was sent to her through the mail, was the murder weapon. Perhaps that can tell us something. May I have the handkerchief, please?
Why, certainly.
Sure, my dear. Oh, here you are.
Why, I thought...
I don't understand.
I say, what is this?
So, a trick.
That's right, Miss McPeak, a trick. But one only a guilty person need fear.
But really, Madam Story, I don't understand.
Yes, Madam Story. Please take the handkerchiefs one at a time. Mark each in pencil with the initials of the person from whom you receive it.
May I have the handkerchiefs, please? Yes, one at a time.
Well, all right. Now, Bella, spread them out on your desk with the initials turned face down. As you probably surmise, none of you had the original handkerchief. That has never left my possession. Here it is.
But I don't understand.
This handkerchief in my hand is impregnated with a deadly poison. When moistened with alcohol, it releases a lethal gas, which is instantly fatal. May I remind you that perfume is 90% alcohol. And a young girl about to go out on a romantic tryst would inevitably moisten it with perfume.
How horrible.
Yes, Mr. Guillon, I agree with you.
But surely you don't suspect any of us.
Why not, Miss McPeak? I've found that a murderer is usually actuated by fear. Fear of what the victim might do to them. All of you faced that fear as far as Louise Mayfield was concerned. But one of you feared so deeply that you dared risk murder to protect what you had. You feared loss of position, prestige, supplanting by a younger, more attractive girl. Loss of all that had made life worth living. That one person alone knew what the fatal handkerchief contained. I gave each one of you what you thought was that handkerchief. I was curious to see what disposition you would make of the evidence. Bella.
Yes?
Please examine those four handkerchiefs carefully. And when you've done that, tell me if any of them are changed since they left our hands last evening.
Yes.
This one has been washed.
Washed? Well, I don't understand.
Read the initials on it. T-D-E-G.
Teresa. Teresa!
Keep away from me. Keep away from me, I say. Keep away from me. I'll shoot.
Why? Cat. She's shot herself.
Oh, it's all my fault. Poor Teresa. Poor thing. She was old. She couldn't stand it. She just couldn't stand it.
No, Mrs. Kruger. It wasn't your fault. It was better so. The end of a passing world. Exit an era.
You have been listening to Murder Clinic. Murder Clinic, the WOR Mutual series, which brings you each week one exciting case, one member from the select band of the world's great detectives. Next week, Murder Clinic will bring you Sir Henry Merivale, known to his host of admirers as H.M. in Death in the Dressing Room. This famous detective finds a brilliantly clever pickpocket and discovers an even more clever murderer. Tonight's detective was Madame Rosica's story, played by Elizabeth Morgan. Original music was composed by Ralph Barnhart and conducted by Bob Stanley. This program was an international exchange feature over the coast-to-coast network of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Tales told on Murder Clinic are adaptations by authors Lee Wright and John A. Bassett. Murder Clinic is produced under the direction of Alvin Flanagan. Frank Knight speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
All right, that's Murder Clinic from September 22nd, 1942, A Scrap of Lace, starring Elizabeth Morgan. That was a broadcast that's heard on the Mutual system. Mutual was, they used to say, the world's largest network, the Mutual Broadcasting System. The Shadow was on the Mutual Network, Lisa. So was the Mysterious Traveler. But I never heard one of these before, Murder Clinic. I only have a couple in the library. But this happened to be about a female detective, and I thought we'd play that.